You ready?
I am Brett T.
Hey, listeners. I should do some ASMR. Hey, listeners. Friendly reminder at the top of the episode to join our Patreon.
Join it.
Amber, what's Patreon? Well, I'll tell you. It takes a lot of time, effort, and resources to produce this podcast. So we appreciate those listeners like you who have decided, you know what? I can give $1, $2, $5 a month to contribute to the Patreon. So please get on over there and do that. We do monthly book giveaways. We do monthly book giveaways at the end of each month. This month we'll be giving away The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead at the end of the month. Oh, actually, it's not going to be at the end of the month. It's going to be at the top of the month. It's going to be February 1st. But before we do that, I just want to shout out three beautiful, lovely, talented, incredible, uniqueness, nerve, and talent patrons who just joined the party. That's going to be AB, Taylor, and Obadiah.
Thank you.
Obadiah, you got in like 5 minutes ago from us recording this, so we thank you for just adding on. Now let's, if you are, what's wrong with me? I just made a boo-boo, and so I feel bad about it because I rarely make mistakes. But anyway.
You make mistakes all the time. I just, this one, I actually did say something. Usually I let them slip because you're a little bit more sensitive.
I don't make a lot of mistakes, but I did recently make a mistake on a thing that Ben and I were supposed to complete. Now we have to re-record it. It's not a big deal. But anyway, if you would like to join our Patreon and support the shit show that is Amber and Ben and soon to be Lil Wild Lynn, you can find that link in the episode notes. Now let's get started with the show.
And you can also just give $1 a month too, which is super
that.
Cool.
$1.
$1.
$1 would make me holler, honey boo boo. Remember honey boo boo? Mm-mm. Oh, God. No. All right, Ben, here we go. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Sci under the Believe Podcast Network. It is indeed a podcast about black science fiction, fantasy, and staying on the same page in this marriage. Today for episode 69... Giggity. We'll be discussing the film Night of the Kings. Night of the Kings was directed by Philip Lecote. He's French, so Philippe Lecote. Well, he speaks French. Sorry, I shouldn't have said he's French. But this film is based mostly in the Ivory Coast. But before we get started on this film that we watched on Hulu, Ben, how are you doing, beloved?
I started my first improv class on Thursday, and it was so fucking awesome. Amber signed me up for it.
Well, this isn't your first improv class. Let's be clear.
Did I say it was my first?
Mm-hmm.
My first improv class of the session.
Right.
Right. So I started my first improv class of the session, which is I'm on the third level.
Yay.
And so lots of improv, you know, I guess you could say studios or what do you call them? Improv schools.
Yeah.
Improv schools. They have levels. Level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5.
And this is the first one that we're taking separately.
Yeah.
Because we took 1 and 2 together. So what's it like to be, you know, in a class without your favorite scene partner?
Yeah, it's cool. I got to play a soap opera starbuck woman who is a shit stirrer. That was my favorite character. I really leaned into that. And then I played like a very bro-y, like popped my collar, like does shots of Malort type of dude.
Well, that one probably wasn't a reach.
You
want to
hear that impression?
Yes.
Hey, bro, you want to do a shot of Malort? Yeah, yeah. I just I took Tammy out. Oh, it was great. Oh,
oh
yeah.
Well, what'd she say?
Oh yeah, she
did she give you head, dude?
Oh yeah, yeah. Wait, how'd you know about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, chicks are supposed to give you head. What else are they for?
Oh, I mean, I'm more into my feelings. Like, we just talked about feelings.
Oh, no way. She went for that?
Of course. Like, I'm a feminist, bro. Like, I do Malort, but I'm also a feminist. Like,
bro, that's kind of weird. Why would you be a feminist?
Because...
Who hurts you, bro?
Because the Cubs hire chicks now.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't read or write, so.
I mean, it,
and sing.
Yeah, I don't know. So it's like you do.
Wait, so what was the soap opera Starbucks thing? Was it a Starbucks employee
that
sings opera?
No, soap opera. You know soap opera? Soaps.
Oh, duh. I'm an idiot.
No, you're not an idiot.
So it was a, like, it's like a like Days of Our Lives, Bold and the Beautiful, but yeah, Starbucks exactly. edition.
Yeah.
It's a very dramatic and crying, but everybody's also like wearing a full face of glamorous makeup.
Yeah. So I looked really, and I mentioned that I wore Prada. And,
oh, look at you knowing and, brands.
Yeah.
Name three more brands.
Gucci and Fendi.
Because of the dogs.
Because
okay.
of the dogs.
So you got Prada, Gucci, Fendi, and...
A Nightlight Podcast right here. I'm wearing a Nightlight Podcast shirt, which
you
is
literally
great.
Can't name another brand.
I can't. Target.
That's what the girls sing in the songs. Louis, Gucci, Fendi, Target. I love that.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We have done a lot today.
We have. You
the
keep me
sun
working.
The sun is setting a little bit, so I'm... You know, it's, I get worried.
We're
I'm
supposed
almost
to go
like a witch in
to
that
the
way.
Art Institute. That
yes,
happened.
But we got so well. Busy today doing things. We were super productive, and I don't know, that always makes me feel good when we can like kind of clean up the space. And
capitalism.
I'm just really excited. You know how you sit down and put some things together? I finally added like a couple of the brands I've collaborated with to my personal website.
Mm, yeah.
Because I was like, oh, I should make this easy for people to find because I've been getting a couple more DMs and things, which is amazing because that's like sustainability for our family. Yay. And so I was like, I should probably just have a Rolodex of some of my work. And sometimes it's really nice to put all that together. Or today I even watched the very first TikTok I made and it was so bad, but so... funny.
It was
also,
on brand. You stayed on brand.
It was very on brand. So it's been really nice.
Clueless,
like,
not really knowing what you're doing. I remember your first.
Oh, you saw it.
Yeah.
Right. That was. You remember that time before the internet knew you? Good times. Remember when I was just a comedian doing my own thing?
Well, then you had to
and
bring
now
me
I'm
into
Ben's
it.
Wife. Yuck.
Yeah. Or I'm your husband.
People still DM me all the time, being like, "Oh my god, you're Ben's wife." It's like this is my page.
Mm-hmm.
My name's right there.
Yeah. So who's main character? Who's the main character?
Still me. I'll
who's,
just block
who's
that
main
person.
Character? Not who's the main character, just who's main character.
I'll just block that person. But no, I'm very excited for you to start classes and just be in that creative space because we do love to create. It's very important to create.
It's the most fun thing to do. I wish all basic needs were met and humans could just create shit all the time.
Yeah.
That everyone could find that one thing that they would want to create as far as art. Because everyone has art inside them. Doesn't
Correct.
Necessarily make it good or successful. But if everyone was just allowed to pursue the art of their heart, we would have a lot less problems.
What a wordsmith you are. I was thinking about that. Just like, you know how you'll just sit and reflect on some of your fears. So one of my fears is like, wild not being creative and how I'd be like, what, where did I go wrong? You don't like the color, you don't like the sing, you don't like the dance. And they're just like, no, I just like to, you know, hang out. It's like, well, yeah, well, what are you passionate about? Like my biggest fear is my child not finding their passion. Or even when you think about your parents, do you ever think like, I wonder if my dad has ever colored, like in a coloring book? Like that's something I just cannot see my father doing, or like making any macaroni art. Or writing a
my
poem.
My mom, yeah. My dad tried to learn how to play guitar, and he gave up. And I wish he went back to it. He's really creative. I wanted, you know, we did one podcast session together where we have a book club, and I need to meet with him again. But you keep me busy as your employee.
You can meet with your dad anytime you want. But yeah, I don't think, I guess the most creative thing I've ever seen my father do is like cooking. Like that's kind of where he gets to shine creatively. Yeah. But like other than that, he doesn't, or maybe like mixing drinks.
Or insulting you during spades or bags.
He's good at insulting. But even one day, me and Alicia were working on a puzzle and we were like, why don't you come in here and join us? He was like, puzzle. I was like, yeah, that's just a meditative exercise. Would you like to join us with the puzzle? And he was like, no, why would y'all be putting together a puzzle? It's like, okay, Like, well, this is
like, can you drink
this
it?
This is my one mandatory check-in with you for today. So I've fulfilled my task. You know what else is super funny?
I feel
funny?
Like my sister Rachel is a little like that. She doesn't really create anything.
Yeah.
I guess she's constantly, I guess she plays with her kids and she likes hanging out with her kids. Her nephew and
yours as well. Right.
Mine. Both. Well, and then her son and then, you know, her nephew. And so she does cool stuff with them. But I took her out, her and her husband out to eat. Remember we took them out to eat? And I was like, what are y'all doing for fun? They're like, and Rachel, my sister Rachel was like, I just don't have time.
Why are you naming names? Yeah, that's...
I'm going to actually talk to her after this. Give her a call. Check in with her.
Get it. No, what was I about to say about my... So, you know how I just talked about my dad? This is so funny. But speaking of, like, other people we like to laugh at, our dog trainer... So, we recently got a trainer for Gucci because we just want to make him as prepared as possible for this baby
coming. We don't
want
him eating wild.
Right.
Like, coming home
to... Which won't happen, but just, like...
A dead baby would be the worst.
Can you stop? Because you... Like, that's not even... I guess it's funny, sure.
No, it's not funny. I'm sorry.
It's okay. But we're doing some training with Gucci, and our dog trainer, she's wonderful, but somehow she always brings up her daddy issues during the training sessions, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, she makes connections with how her dad is unable to do things.
Yes.
And so we, as, you know, dog parents need to not be like her father.
Yes, but it's always like that. She's like, see, Gucci is struggling with this thing, but he doesn't, like, he needs time and patience to learn this thing. Like, my father, he never had patience when we were learning things growing up. Like,
give a solid example about
she
her,
would, but it's
her father,
always
you know, would try to
dad.
Teach her math, and, like, you just need think time. And so when you point to a dog and say, hey, go, don't, she's sort of, because you're sort of, you need reinforcement to say, give a command and just wait for a moment.
Right.
You repeat the command because you're a little bit more impatient. So she gave a solid analogy about, you know, giving think time.
Yeah, but that's always her go-to.
Yeah, her go-to. Because
it'll
it's
be
easy.
Something just with her father.
It's easy to make fun of family.
Yeah, but it's not family. It is her dad every time.
Every
now and then hey, you good?
Well, you mostly talk about your father on the podcast in a negative light.
I've talked about my mom.
And then I am my brother. Oh yeah, you have.
Everybody can get some. Okay, well maybe I do as well. Anyway, you want to tell the people where we're going to be in a couple weeks, they can find us in Chicago.
Yeah, we're going to have a meet and greet at the Science Fiction Capricorn. We're going to do a live podcast. We're going to talk about Janelle Monáe. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fucking awesome.
I didn't know we were doing a separate meet and greet. Is that a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I should probably tell you what we're doing. So the way the structure of the podcasts the way that this Capricorn is run is that you meet in these convention center rooms, we'll do our presentation, and then afterwards you'll come up and talk to us or you'll ask questions to us, and then we'll just hang out. And then you hang out. So you have like an hour session. Generally what happens is you do like 45 minutes, 40 minutes, and then people sort of discuss the rest. But before and after, come and talk to us. We'll be there.
Okay, great.
It's a big convention center, so people are moving in and out, going different places. Omarion variant is going down.
That's great. Sorry. Is that a real thing?
Yes.
Is that a real statistic?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
yeah, the numbers are going down. Yes, the
great.
Omicron variant numbers in Chicago are going down. Whether Lightfoot is cheating the numbers and lying about them, that's a whole other story.
You know, I just have to be prepared for meet and greets. You know, I just need mental... I love meeting people, you know, but it's just...
It's energy.
You know, I need heads up. It's not even energy. It's just like, even when I go... Like, I went to the bar.
Amber doesn't want to talk to you, listeners.
I do, but sometimes people get a little... one of the things I do well is making people feel like they know me. That's a strength of mine because I overshare and I cry a lot. And I'm very vulnerable. But then, you know, people will just go up to you and start rubbing your belly. Like, so I have to like mentally prepare.
Has that happened yet?
Yes, Ben. Like when I've seen people out in public.
That you know?
No, they don't know. They know me, but I don't know them.
Oh, so you? This is the first time I'm hearing this.
Oh, I haven't told you that?
No.
It'll be people I know or don't know, which is fine. It'll just take me aback a little bit. Yeah. I'm just kind of like, oh, wait.
I've never seen that. That's never happened when I'm with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, remember last night where like our friend just like went in and was like, oh, yes, which I love him, but it's just something new for me.
Okay, yeah. So that's
your thing. Think about like if everywhere you went, people friends, just started rubbing your belly.
Yeah.
Friends I have see. Done it and people who are like, oh my God, I've seen your TikTok. Like, come here, you're pregnant. Congrats.
Okay, yeah, that's uncomfortable.
So I just have to I'm mentally prepare.
The way I greet a lot of my friends is I go up, I'm like, hi, like friends.
Yeah, you know, when you're pregnant, I hug them, the handshake is a belly touch.
Yeah, the handshake goes from, yeah, that is uncomfortable.
Yeah, the books told me that, like, be prepared for that, and you can, you know, say yes or no, but it's just something I have to sometimes be like, people, belly bumps are like golden tickets, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, people are like, oh, let me touch it for good luck.
Oh, golden tickets rub this thing. As far as... I guess
not going into
crossing over your consent or like radical consent.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like that thing you rub before the big game.
Your dick. That's what I rub before the big game.
Oh my God.
You're my big game.
No,
this relationship is the big game. Look, this I wake up every morning.
Is the big game.
I rub it for good luck.
Well, maybe I should think more about it. Like, yeah, like. Like, I remember as a kid, and this, correct me if I'm, like, way off, but we used to go to this, like, local peeking, way off as in, like, if this is highly offensive, proceeds to tell story. But when we used to go to Peking in, you know, little podunk Athens, Georgia, they had this big Buddha at the front. Yeah. And we just all would just be rubbing on his belly, you know, it's just, it was
fucking karma.
Right. Okay. That is a thing.
No, I'm saying you're getting, people are rubbing your belly because you violated the Buddha space when you rubbed his belly.
Probably. This is
So yes, there's a fun story. I studied religion in university, and the tradition of the Fat Buddha is when Christians started to invade and colonize parts of Japan and bring this idea of Christianity to combat like the development of Santa Claus. Like mm-hmm. the fat Santa who gives kids presents, the Fat Buddha came about.
Right.
That was sort of like a response to that, to sort of make it more jolly, because the Buddha is not fat.
So the Buddha was a response
to
Santa.
Siddhartha Buddha is this,
which
you know,
came
the
first?
Legend.
Buddha came first, but...
But the Fat Buddha came after
Santa
Claus. Santa,
as a counter-protest.
Yeah, I'll put a link about the history of the Fat Buddha. I found it super, super intriguing how...
And then came the pregnant woman.
Yeah, so we have Buddha, Jesus, Santa Claus, Fat Buddha.
I'm Fat Buddha.
No, I'm saying like historically.
You pointed at me. So
right, because you have these two religious traditions, Buddhism and Christianity. Buddhism comes first, then Christianity, and then you get Santa Claus, but then you get
which
the
is
Fat
also
Buddha,
a religion.
Which is part of Christianity.
The Church of Santa, yes.
Sign me up.
St. Nicholas Church. All right. While you look that up, Ben, should I talk about what people are saying about this in these streets?
Absolutely.
Which is very biased because we are currently just reading the very positive Apple Podcast ratings that y'all submit. If you want, you can pull up some negative TikTok comments to balance things out, because I definitely... that we do get negative comments because... Everything on the internet has to have negative comments. It does balance out. But I caught myself seeing one today and I was like, no, get out of here. So I'll share that in a minute. But here are the Apple Podcast ratings from listeners like you. Remember, listeners, if you submit an Apple Podcast rating, we will be reading it on the show. Good, bad, weird, whatever. This one's from Ivory TC. Love the show. Your review of Lilith's Brood was so good, it made me want to read it again. I read it in college and immediately loved Octavia Butler's work. And now I can't get through the sex scene without laughing at Ben's comment on TikTok about if he had to do it. The connections you all make on the show, I'm so not used to saying you all. They wrote you all, but the connections y'all make on the show were so spot on. It makes me think in ways that I had not before, especially seeing as how so long ago the book was written. compared to things going on right now. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Ivory TC. This one's from Yo Girl Joe. Great content. This podcast surprised me. I'm not into sci-fi or fantasy books, but this podcast is changing my mind, which is music to my ears. I know Amber and Ben from TikTok and the Gram. Please watch Amber try to teach Ben about playing spades in a black household. I laugh out loud. They have great conversations about books. Let me zoom this in. Oh, your girl's getting on. They have great conversation about books and TV shows and movies by black authors and creators. Amazing. They bring up things I don't think about, and I am a thinker. Check out this podcast. It's fresh, witty, honest, and thoughtful. It's only the beginning for Amber and Ben. Oh, blessings to you both in 2022, and congrats on the baby sci-fi sigh as well. Oh, yay. I love that. That's I love y'all. All of these are great. Okay. And then this last one's from K_later99. I'm always learning from Ben and Amber. I'm so happy I found you both on TikTok. I enjoyed your content so much that I had to give your podcast a listen. Unsurprisingly, I fell in love with your banter and your thoughts on the books and the movies you reviewed. And yes, I've definitely listened to every single episode. Oh my God, good for you, because those early episodes are crunchy.
Yeah. But we figured out the audio. I don't even listen to them.
Okay. I always look forward to hearing your opinions on different topics and being educated on things I may know a little about. Thank you for making your content that is educational, yet entertaining and fun. Wishing you both
like
the
best. Like my
classroom.
Entertaining and fun and educational.
Wishing you both the best, especially with your approaching parenthood. We love y'all so much. Look at me like looking at the camera. We really appreciate your very positive reviews and positive energy, because like I said, there's a balance out there in the world. You ready to talk to me now? I was telling Ben that there is this camp of people who follow us, and they are very, they're the think piece girls. They like to be like, can we talk about how actually like this couple is very toxic? Which I'm not going to argue with them about that.
obviously they're correct.
But it's frustrating because people do this thing where they're like, notice how every video they put out is negative. And I'm like, okay, first of all, that's not true.
It's mostly true.
First of all.
Popular ones. Yeah.
So well, our maternity shoot wasn't positive.
You're right.
Or I haven't put out videos of me like crying.
That's negative.
I think that's like vulnerable content versus like us arguing content. Yeah. But
we don't argue. We debate. I think there's a difference. But we have arguments in more of a scientific sense.
Well, here's the thing. Every application is supposed to serve a different function. So TikTok is going to be your short funnies. Instagram is going to be your longer full stories. YouTube is going to be your more like vulnerable content. Sci-fi Sci is going to be your nerdy book club. Like, so there might be some truth to what they're saying, but to that I say, go follow on other platforms. And to that they say, we do.
Good.
We do. We follow you on everything and we still hate you, which is great. So with that being said, Ben, we are sitting at a ripe 23 minutes in. Are you ready to talk about the actual movie, Night of the Kings?
Googled helped me find this film. I was looking up just black fantasy creators.
So yes is the answer to your question. Okay.
Yes. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah, I'm going to jump into how we discovered this. But to be honest, this film was pretty confusing at times. Or it was so symbolic and fantastical and whimsical that I felt the need to... It has the potential to make you feel a little stupid. Because this is film.
Yeah, this is cinema.
This is cinema. And it's amazing and beautiful and absolutely stunning. But afterwards, I went ahead and... watched a symposium by the African. Yeah. So I watched a symposium with a bunch of people interviewing the director, Gucci. Come here. Let me take this leash.
God damn. I mean, this is going to be so fun when we have a kid.
Yeah.
The episodes are going to be
coming in and out.
A hot 5 minutes.
Love to do like 15 minutes. So. Yeah, I had to watch the African American Film Critic Association run a symposium interviewing the director, which was super, super helpful. And then I read two articles, one from Polygon and then one from the Roger and Ebert website, which was fantastic. Cool.
Did you say Roger and Ebert?
Roger and Ebert.
Sure. Keep going.
We'll put both of those links in there. You ever watch a film and realize that you need some, like, do some homework afterwards?
Yes, which I used to be like, ooh, yes. But sometimes it just feels pretentious. It's like, give me enough so I'm intrigued enough to go look up a think piece, but I don't need to in order to fully understand it.
Mm-hmm. You could, I see what you mean. Like, you could watch this film and leave still understanding a semblance of what had happened.
Yeah, but you still need, like, help me understand what happened here at the end or whatever. I felt that way about, like, I've said this in the past, but it's like watching Get Out versus Us, mm-hmm. right? Like, Get Out, like Jordan Peele's films, if you're not familiar. Get Out felt very much like, damn, that was good. Like, it'd be cool to read a think piece, but I really don't have to understand it. Whereas Us was like, I need to watch that again. Like, I might have missed a couple of things. And then sometimes you're like, actually, I didn't miss anything. It was just like a little bit harder and a little bit more complicated. But, and there was a...
you have to actively watch it.
You have to actively watch it. And I don't know. So we have said this in the past because we have watched foreign films in the past, but it just takes a different kind of mindfulness to watch foreign films, not only because you're reading all the subtitles so you can't look away, but there's a pacing that's just very different. And I looked over the bin, and I probably sound like a freaking idiot, but I looked over the bin at one point. I was like, why does every foreign film feel like they really rev you up at the beginning, and then there's these long scenes, which I do love, but nothing's tied up until like the last 5 to 15 minutes of it, of the movie. And so that's what it felt like to me. Obviously, I'm making a generalization and I'm horribly problematic. But if you watch this film with us, you will notice, like, I remember at the beginning of this film, my heart was beating. I was like, oh my God, like, what is about to go down right here? Like, especially when this one trans character was being like surrounded and circled by this sea of like hyper masculine men, and I was like truly like looking away and very nervous for her. And then
before you get any more to like details, I think we should give a summary, because it doesn't really make sense without
can I just wrap up this
finish
thing?
Yeah, finish your thought. Yeah,
and then near the end I was kind of like, woo, how many minutes we got left? Yeah. Like, so I just wanted to say that I thought that this movie was gonna be more like a bell curve. And it really kind of, it was more like a heartbeat. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay, sorry. Give a quick summary.
Yeah, so a nameless boy is brought to a prison outside of Abidjan called Lamaka. And so Abidjan is a city in the Ivory Coast, and Lamaka is a real prison that recently, or I think a little while ago, there was a massive riot there. And so there's this intense prison hierarchy and traditions, and the prison is basically run by the prisoners. There is a warden.
Correct.
But the warden doesn't do anything, or really can't do anything, doesn't have enough guards.
He's like a substitute teacher at this point.
Yeah,
like
that's a great analogy. And so this guy who runs it, they call it the Dongoro. His name is Blackbeard. And he decides to choose this young boy to be a storyteller, and the storyteller is called a Roman, and he does this because he is slowly getting sick, and when you get sick, the leader is supposed to kill themselves and relinquish their power.
Yeah, there's this rule, which is kind of strange, because it's like, but you're already sick, just die naturally.
Yeah, I mean, traditions...
I got you. No, yeah, no. Right, it's a movie, always, yeah.
Well, just even religious traditions, like, why do we eat bread, you know, instead of for the Eucharist, right? Like, when you take communion, why do we have bread?
Oh, got it.
Like,
why sorry, I thought you just meant, like, regular
rice?
Old white bread. I'm like,
yeah.
Because it tastes good with peanut butter? I don't know.
Why this instead of that? You know, like, tradition has to do with reasons. And you could assume that if you're weak in the prison, in a prison where it's a very intense, people are living on top of each other, the only privacy are just these, like, you know, sheets they put up. Like, it would make sense that the leader can no longer just live anymore.
So, fun exercise. If you could be the leader of something that you really believed in, but if you got sick in that leadership role, you had to kill yourself, would you step up and be a leader?
I mean, you're asking, would I follow a tradition that I have sort of decided to accept?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean, would I step in? I mean, I'm sick, so I have to follow the tradition and kill myself.
I'm saying, but would you knowingly want to be someone's successor, knowing that your fate is eventually having to kill yourself? Would it be worth the role if you had to end your life in a suicide?
I think that's a very unfair question. Because
that's literally what happened in the movie.
Yeah, and obviously everyone wants to be the next leader. Well, there are people...
No, some people like to be followers. Some people like to be moths, and some people like to be butterflies.
Oh, yeah, I would not... I would not... All right, well, me... The question's tricky, like, because if I was the person's right-hand man, then yes, I would want to stand up if I had worked my way to that. I think probably I would probably want to position my... No, I don't...
Like,
I don't
would you want to be a king if you knew you had to eventually kill yourself? Or a leader of anything?
If I got sick? You know, probably not. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a leader.
Okay.
And in a prison?
It doesn't have to be a prison. It's just...
Like
it could
school?
Be anywhere. It could be a school leader. It could be a councilman.
That's
it could
really
be,
weird.
It could be a leader in whatever is your current, like, locus, and it can apply to what you're doing now.
I think it's so tricky to sort of put ourselves in that shoe, because in some sense, I am a leader currently in my job. That's part of my job. And so
I'm sure this
in
is
the
question
hierarchy
that, like,
of the prison, a leader has the most, like, the leaders in this prison get access to, like, PS4, you know, they can play PlayStation.
That's not what happened, but what you're stepping
no,
in.
No, they did.
Didn't see a PS4 in the movie, but.
Yeah, so you're not familiar with the way the controllers look. There's a PS4 in the movie.
Okay, well,
I'll have to show it to you later.
That wasn't clear, but so in that system where you would have access to more resources, you would have more control over how things are ran.
That.
You would step up
and then
be a
just
leader.
Pretend not to be sick. Sort of like what Blackbeard does for some of the
movies. Yeah, but he's on an oxygen tank at that point. So it's like, bro, you're
obviously sick. But I guess
you're so bad at not pretending to be sick, though.
Yeah. Well, with you.
You remember that first time you got sick in our relationship? I was like, wow, he is a baby.
Yeah, I didn't want to go to work that day.
Right.
Point being is probably. I mean, I just don't want to be living in that prison.
Of course not. But I was asking the question, and we'll take a quick break after this, but I was asking the question just in general. It's like, I'm sure Martin Luther King had to really say to himself, like, obviously he didn't die in a suicide, obviously, but he probably just had to say to himself, like, am I willing to be the face of this movement and potentially be what leads to my demise? Or, you know, just... is this movement going to kill me
for the cause?
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have to find the right cause. I think anybody could potentially die for a cause.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's a cause that I would die for. I can't really think of... I mean, maybe you. I would die for the cause of you.
Yeah.
To save you. I would die for you.
I'd
kill for you, too. Oh, wait, let me get through this summary as well.
Sorry.
So basically the Dangro, he has this boy who remains nameless, and the boy has to tell a story. And if he finishes the story before the night of the red moon, or before the sun comes up on the night of the red moon, then he is killed. And so the boy Roman has to continue to make up this story. And he decides to tell a story about a microbe, what they call the microbes, leader named Zama. And so you get a lot of history of the Ivory Coast. And basically, after this political upheaval in 2010, I believe, the current president lost the election, claimed that the election was stolen from him, which caused a lot of instability. Sounds familiar? Yes, because this is what happens if you do not have a peaceful transfer of power. Anyway, 2010, huge stability in the Ivory Coast. One of the cities, Abidjan, it was so horrific that all these young kids end up, like, banding together and calling themselves microbes, or that label was putting on them, like nasty bacteria. And they would walk around just, like, with machetes, you know, stopping people, cutting people. And then eventually people were so angry that kids accused of being a microbe were like being lynched out in the streets, which ends up happening in this film as well. And so we hear the story of this microbe leader, and that story sort of takes this like fantastical, whimsical turn. And it's really stunning. And as the boy is telling this story, the other prisoners are listening and acting it out. It's good.
Yes. Let's take a quick break. Baby, it's cold outside. And you know that winter weather can leave your skin feeling ashy, crusty, dry. So what's the solution? Quench your thirsty skin and leave it feeling satin smooth with Way Melrose Place Body Cream. It's fast absorbing to nourish your skin when you need it the most, hydration that lasts and prevents dryness, and high quality nourishing ingredients like squalane, coconut oil, kapwaku butter, and jojoba seed oil. Experience the new Way Melrose Place Body Cream and Body Cleanser. Your body, your way. Go to theouai.com and use the code BELIEVE. BLEAV is in the episode notes to get 15% off your entire purchase. That's 15% off your order at theouai.com with code BELIEVE. Hey y'all, it's Amber with your last reminder of the month. If you are a Black business owner, please be sure to fill out the Google form. As you know or may not know, I will be showcasing 28 Black businesses during the month of February on my personal Instagram page, burr_iam. So one business per day. Please fill out the Google form. That Google form also asks you to submit a headshot, so a real pretty picture of your face, not your brand, not your business, your face. And then also a 30-second video of you saying like, hey, my business is blank. I work in this community. This is what our brand and our mission is all about. This is why you need me. Happy Black History Month, everybody. A quick video like that. So please be sure to check out that Google form. Now let's get back to the show. Okay, so we are back. Ben just gave a really great summary of what happened in the book, but I do want to make... Ben just gave a great summary of what happened in the movie, the film, the cinema. But I do want to make and take note that we as the viewer and also Roman as the storyteller did not know when they began telling the story about this rule that if they finished the story before sunup, they were killed. So we had to slowly figure that out. So as you can imagine, this young kid is like wondering why everybody's so hype about this. And so he starts telling the story and then eventually, you know, spoiler alert, but we are discussing this. He gets told by one of the like old kooks in the pen that like, hey, just so you know, like do not finish the story, like drag it on as long as you can. And because if you finish your story before you're supposed to, they will kill you. Which, I mean, what kind of pressure is that?
Yeah.
Like if you were told like, yo, go up there and tell a story, make sure it's good and make sure it lasts all fucking night. Bro.
Well, that's...
I would be like, oh, okay, let's start with first grade. So here we go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole tradition of 1001 Nights, which is the, essentially, it is the Shakespeare of the Arab world. It was written during the Arab-Islamic Golden Age.
Okay.
And so the premise is that this king marries a woman and then kills the woman and then marries another one, kills the woman. But in this case, he marries this young woman, and I forgot her name. I read these. It's a huge collection of stories. That's where Aladdin comes from.
Right. You said like Arabian Nights or something. Yeah.
Yeah, 1001 Nights. And so he's going to kill this woman, and the woman starts telling him a story. And so he tells the king, the woman, his new bride, the new queen, tells the king a new story every single night for 1001 nights.
Oh, I like that. So thank you. Because you casually dropped like, well, obviously this is this like Islamic story that you didn't know about. And I'm just like, well, some of us didn't know.
Yeah.
Some of us only grew up learning Jesus feeding the 5,000. Sorry. So every night so she basically tells him these stories in order to continue living.
Yeah. And there's elements of Islam.
I mean, I hate that the stakes are that high, but.
Right. You know, it's a beautiful collection. And then of stories.
That king would be like, bitch, all right. If I was the queen, I would be singing. I would be, I'm sure Wilde is going to be like, can we just take a night off, please?
I feel like if we threaten, you know, Wilde with death, it might scare the child enough to continue to read stories.
But she would have to be...
There's literary and mental death when you don't read every night, you know?
So what you're saying is right now in this moment, we have decided to make sure Wilde reads a thousand books.
Well, like just read every night.
For 1,000 days.
Just eternity. Like the eternity. Threat. I think basically at the end, the woman does become the queen. I think that's how, you know, that's the frame story, right? A frame story is the story within the story. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what I really remember is that Nagi Mahfouz, who's an Egyptian, like the Egyptian literary writer, wrote a sort of like fanfic about, or very, not fanfic, but inspired, you know, conversation with 1001 Nights and sort of gets more in detail. It's really, really good. But yeah, Islam has a lot to do with this, right? Like I'm
not going to sit here and co-sign like I have all of this knowledge of Islam, because I don't. I know that you do, but I don't. But right. But as this movie was, I know that you love religion. So as this movie was progressing, you did a great job of being like, oh, he prays in the mosque because he has that prayer bump. And I was like, what's that? And you were like, it's almost this like bruise and sign of pride. It's like you pray so consistently at this mosque, like over 5 times a day, that you develop a bruising on your head. But those are things I appreciate that I got to watch it with you, because I would have easily missed those things. But well, the parts of the movie that I connected with were just this like power of storytelling. And I remember when I first tried to start doing comedy in Chicago, I was very afraid to call myself a comedian. Like I knew I was funny growing up, just like from the lunch table to, you know, always every progress report saying like smart but talks too much, makes too many jokes. But it was very hard for me to say like, let me go take stand up class 1 or let me go take improv 1. So my very first class in Chicago was a storytelling class. Mm. And I realized like all of my stories were funny, and I was a funny storyteller. And I remember my teacher being like, you're just a comedian. Like, why don't you just like go do the thing you really want to do? Because it's clear you like to make people laugh. There is a form of stand up and comedy that is storytelling, and there is vulnerability in that. So you should just do that. So that's when I really started to lean into like, let me just go take a stand up class. But I love storytelling. Remember those days when very early when I was like, I want to do the Moth, which is a storytelling mm-hmm. competition in Chicago. Yeah. And then what happened?
And then I was like, I want to do it too. You're very inspiring. You inspire me to live better. Really? Yeah, absolutely. When I see you doing something, especially comedy, you make me want to be funnier, which is part of the reason when you asked me, you know, what do you want for Christmas? I was like, sign me up for the comedy class, you know, sign me up for an improv class so I can get to your level. Get on your level. You,
let me be clear. You would never, ever, 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 never, ever, ever, never get on my level. That's a song as well. But yeah, but you can try. And I think we make a great team, and I was very excited in this movie to see the like one person telling the story and then this beautiful like interpretive dance and the animation that the dancers had with each story. And these were like just men in the prison getting together and just like acting everything out. Like that felt so powerful to me. I got really revved up that did you ever in high school have those exercises where you had to, well, you're homeschooled, sorry.
I went to high school for a little bit.
You went to a high school for like a year. Did you ever have those exercises where you had to choose, like, there's 10 people, these are all of their occupations, you're stranded on the island, you can only choose 5 of them to be on the island
sure.
with you?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the game.
So if you had to choose any 5 occupations, like, to oh, be I with see. You on
you
an
would
island,
choose
what
a
would
griot.
They be?
A griot.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Or I remember being the person that was like, I'd go with the doctor, I'll go with the architect, I'll go with the gardener, and then I'll go with like the poet or something. And all my classmates being like, the poet is worthless. Like, why would you go with them? And I was like,
because you motivation.
Who's going to entertain you fucks like on this island? Or which is so fascinating. So
well, which is why Blackbeard was like, I'm losing control. What can I do? Oh, I'm going to create entertainment. Like right. That was a way for him to hold control. And eventually, once he realized that there was no hope for him, he does end up sort of killing himself. We see him do that in this very almost like symbolic way. But you're right. You know, you choose the poet. Yeah. You would have survived on the desert island, I think.
I think that's why a lot, like, when we talk about, like, communities, there was this one community I saw that, like, tried to sort of be, you know, like, leave society and start their own. And they were all like, we had a couple of skills, but it's really, really hard, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you kind of need just, like, one person that's literally just there to, like, tell stories or see visions or add that entertainment factor, because we are so social and like that's just a part of the human experience just as much as like healthcare and things like that. So it really feels good. Like in other cultures, I feel like the storyteller is like one of the highest positions, even a teacher, like highest positions. Whereas in America, it's like, well, these jobs are like underpaid or whatever. So a starving artist, you're like, you don't make real things. Like I'm a doctor. Yeah. I'm a real job. I'm a lawyer. I'm a real job.
Yeah. That definitely is something that we'll probably have to fight over and over and over and over again. And just our society has placed so much value on practicality and money. I did want to come back to the Islam part, because what I found so fascinating is that you have a very religious Muslim character, and you could tell by the prayer bump. But at the same time, is this religious character believes in like a magical amulet, right? And so what I find so intriguing is, you know, how the term that religious scholars will use is syncretism, is when you fuse one religious practice with another.
Okay.
And so how like African spirituality, whether it was, you know, colonized by Christianity or Islam, still found its way, like those traditions, whether it be like Ifra, still found its way within these dominant religions, right? And so even with one of the characters, Zama, his father believes in like this magical amulet, and Zama is sort of like a mystical character in himself. And I thought that was like, it was just so fascinating, because you have these realistic religions with very like strict, you know, traditional practices, but then you have the mystical religious practices, and there's this easy fusion between the two, where, which we also saw when we talked about Eve's Bayou. Remember, like,
yeah,
that you would pray to Christ, but then you would still, the medium would
go to a
would,
psychic yeah. and do voodoo.
So
and,
there was mm-hmm. no disconnect
conflict.
Between,
yeah.
which the director even says, and that it's important, you know, a quote he says that it's important today to make films in Africa, which include our vision of the world. And that there is, he calls it, it's not logical. The Ivory Coast is not too logical like a European culture. The border is very fine between real things and magical things, invisible worlds and physical worlds. And so Islam is a very like physical religious practice. Like the Quran is the actual word of God, mm-hmm. right? Like, and it has to be read in Arabic. That nothing else, translations, you don't call them Qurans, you say that's the translation of the Quran. And the practice of prayer beads, bowing, you know, bowing or praying towards Mecca, that's very physical. And so, but the fusion with the mystical, where it's implied that Blackbeard turns into a doe at some point, right? So that mm-hmm. fusion with the,
like
the storytelling, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's so... It's really hard for me to understand in a lot of ways. Like, I'm like, oh, this is my impression to be like, this is stupid, right? It's illogical to think.
Or dismiss it as...
Or yeah, I'm dismissive.
Yeah.
Where I think you're more, because you practice yoga, and you're just more stretched out.
Yeah, because, you know, yoga is a very, like... Yoga is mostly about, like, finding things... or maintaining things in this like equanimous state. So you can have, I think you can believe in ghosts and you can believe in God. I think you can have natural hair and also slap a wig on every now and then. Like, everything doesn't have to be in conflict. You can still, you know, those were two very different examples. But
I can get behind the physical behind, like, the different hair, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's fresh on my mind because I saw a lot of discourse online today about, like, people with locked hair arguing with people. And when I say people, I mean black people. Black people with locked hair arguing with black people who, like, wear wigs as a protective style.
That's a great
style.
No, that's a great
example. And I was
example.
Like, there's this kind of, like, no one's better than the other. It's the problem lies where when you think that your natural hair is inferior to the protective style or the straight hair or whatever. But is it okay to do both? Like, yes, like, both of those worlds can exist, but there's just, like, a lot of that there.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, we're coming back to this idea of the binary, and I say binary in terms of the capital B, this desire to create two separate entities and that they cannot fuse, right? And that's, you know, that's the very definition of queerness, is that you fuse things together. To be queer is not to be one or the other.
Right.
And we often times create this false binary, and these false binaries create violence, tension, and and there's this really incredible, beautiful scene in the film that actually reminded me from the Sword in the Stone. You remember that?
Yes.
Do you remember? And you remember at the end of the film where the witch and the wizard start fighting?
Mm-hmm.
And they transfer into different kinds of things.
Like animals or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that there's a scene where this, like, mystical, powerful queen who has magical abilities ends up fighting her brother, who also has mystical, magical abilities. And, like, she turns into a bird and then an elephant. And he turns fire and turns into a thread. And he turns into a needle. And they're, like, battling mm-hmm. each other by turning into different things. Which was, like, very, very mystical and cool. But they are brother and sister. And this desire, like, you know, black people who are, they're both black, and they're both hairstyles.
Not the Sword of the Stone. This is.
Yeah, what you're talking about online.
Back to the hair care conversation.
Right? Like, these are your, like, brothers and sisters. And, you know, as far as, like, sharing an identity. And you're just, you're arguing and fighting and battling out. Where at, like, where does that end?
Yeah, I mean, and that happens with, you know, tons of things, right? Even, you know, going back to me, like, stumbling on negative comments and being like, oh, that's a bummer. But it's like, two things can be true at once. You can actually watch a video of me and you and think this is negative and toxic. And then you can also laugh at something that you mm-hmm. saw later. And we are in this space where it is not okay, and it should be okay, but it's not okay to agree with, like, 95% of what someone does and then be in tension with the 5%.
Yeah.
And I wish we weren't there because, like, it makes it really hard to just see people as people. Like, there are 95% of the things that you and I are going to do together, people are going to be on board with. And then the minute people find out, like, you have a dildo and you like the dildo and you're bisexual and I'm bisexual, people are like, well, I was with them till that. Or I was with them until I found out Ben was an atheist. Or I was with them until I found out Amber called him a bitch. That was highly disrespectful. I'm out of here.
By the way, I have lots of Christian friends.
Right. Oh, you're going to be that person? It's like,
I do.
So,
though,
first off,
like,
I have.
I do.
I know three
I'm not
black
gonna,
people.
Like,
I just want to name off the
my
top.
My father is a pastor. I still get along with them. Like, I would die for you to practice your religion. Like, I would never want someone to be oppressed because of their religion.
Right. Okay.
But there's this assumption that people who are atheists want, literally, I'm serious, like, they want, they want to, like,
connect the dots for me,
because
I was like,
want,
I'm confused about death.
Well, I'm not a militant atheist, but there's an assumption that all atheists are militant and that we want to, like, destroy their churches and burn down their churches.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying, like, now. Well, yeah, but that's the thing, like, we're, and I don't want to use the word divisive, because even that now is just like, it belongs to, like, one group of people, right? But it is very much so like that. Like, I've had friends who are like, I love this and this and this that you do, but, like, this thing gives me pause, or I don't know, people get really caught up and then they're like, up, instant unfollow because of what you said about mommy baby products. It's like, fine. Like, and it's like, that's just not how people are. Like, I'm trying to do even a better job about, like, interacting with someone and being like, this one thing gives me pause about them, but like, no, they're cool. You know? Like, as far as content creators, as far as who I have in my feed and in my world, like, we're just humans. Like, there are going to be some parts of people that you just don't agree with. Like, and I get it. If they're like, yeah, but I hate black people, obviously, like, that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
But if there's somebody that's like, I don't know, I need to go to church every Sunday, like, I can be friends with you. And it's just, we're far away from that. But speaking of queerness, before we warp up the show, I do want to, can we talk for 2 seconds about the trans character? Do you want to, there was a trans character in this story that was like sort of
let's,
part.
I mean, I, yeah, let's get into that. So one of my big problems with the film was how the how the trans character was presented. And I don't think it's fair for trans people to constantly have their representation like focused in trauma and pain. And so there's a scene that I thought was unnecessary, and though it might have been realistic, where you get the impression that this trans character is about to be raped, and it doesn't, you don't they don't show anything. It is disturbing, but you could have I think it could have been handled a little bit more sensitively.
Yeah, you're kind of like, what did this add to the story?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that this specific film has that scene in it, right?
Right.
Or the trans character at one point, it does, participates in a plot to kill somebody else.
Right.
Right? Which, that character's motivation and why they did it, the character's name is Sexy. It's fine. But
I mean, I don't think it's her name. I think that's just what everybody calls
her. Yeah, that's what, yeah. So that within itself is fine. But when you look at trans representation in films, they're so mired in like trauma, rape, assault, hurt, pain. And so this felt for me just another example of that.
Yeah.
When I look at it within a megatext.
Yeah, and it's hard because I found myself, you know, giving them points for like, I'm like, okay, no one's misgendered her. This is not, she has speaking lines. She's basically has a boyfriend in the story who's like one of the top dogs, and everybody knows it and everybody respects this relationship. But yeah, it is very hard when one of those like intro scenes were like so nerve-wracking, and when we look back and think about it, like, why did that scene have to exist? Like, I think they were trying to say, like, this is a movie about, like, a very animalistic, hyper-masculine prison. But there were tons of ways that was shown without those parts needing to be there.
Question for you. So the director mentioned that, like, he actually had most of the characters, he said 25% of the actors were actually in prison at one point.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's so powerful.
Yeah. Is it Yeah. My question for you, is that a sigh for you, or is that something to celebrate?
I think that's something to celebrate.
Yeah.
I mean, when we're talking about like authentic casting for things, mm-hmm. it's inspiring to hear that, like, oh, you're actually having conversations with the people that this film reflects. Mm-hmm. I get disappointed even when I see biopics where, I'll say this, like, this is an aside, but you'll connect the dots. Recently, the Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson, maybe biopic or series is dropping soon. And I remember there was some discourse where the girl who played Pam Anderson was like, I've never had a conversation with her, but I don't feel like I need to have one. Like, and Pam Anderson's like, are you kidding? Like, it's very strange that someone can say, like, I don't, like, even, like, Pamela Anderson is still, like, very much alive. Like, she's not on her way out or anything like that. Yeah. And it's like, y'all didn't want to set up just like a lunch about the person that you're portraying. Whereas, you know, when Selena died and they were making Selena, like J-Lo went and stayed in Selena's family's home and had several conversations and looked through pictures and got grounded in like, this is who this character is supposed to be. Now, I know that there's a lot of discourse about like, she's Puerto Rican and Selena's Mexican and why was this chosen? But I think it hits different when, you know, unless this person's like, if this person's not dead, I think you should have a conversation with them. I heard the same thing about Patrizia Gucci. Like, Gaga didn't have a conversation with her. Yes, she was in prison, but y'all could have still facilitated a conversation. I think it's very strange when you're portraying something that you don't have any sort of touch point to. So I like that, like, I also don't know how hard it is to find employment or transition back into society once you've been in prison abroad, but it's really fucking hard in the U.S. And so if there is a movie that is like, hey, we want to hear from like people who have been inmates and do this film, like how would y'all feel about it? Or I think inmates could almost be like sensitivity readers in that way. Am I like way off with that?
No, I think the only thing is that when, for example, my example of this is The Wire. The Wire, you know, hired actual drug dealers, you know. And so when you play, when you're dealing with something traumatic like prison and you're having people play this out, could that reawaken like traumatic memories, or is it like,
I think anybody who's been through something like that wants to say like,
perhaps
I want to talk to my, you know, Abbott Elementary just did a funny bit about that, where this like white teacher was trying to teach them about like these riots in South Philly. And another teacher was like, well, my uncle, my cousin, he was a part of them. Like, let's bring him in and talk to you about it. Yeah. And obviously he learned like a completely different story about it. But I was watching at the bar the other night. I don't know if you remember this, but did you see what movie was playing at the bar we were at?
No.
So we were at this bar and Twilight was on.
Oh, really?
And it was the scene where like, what's her name? Bella was like pregnant and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And I was looking at it in my peripheral vision and I was like, her belly and just how she's like walking and acting is just so fucking fake. Like, it's very clear that she's not pregnant. And I of course, now that I am pregnant, I'm like heightened senses to when people are pregnant in film and cinema, and it's so frustrating.
So like, she should have gotten pregnant for the film, maybe.
I agree. Right? Yeah. Yes, correct. Or at least had discourse about like, hey, I'm pregnant. Let me show you like the waddle, the lean, the ache, like.
Or someone on set to sort of coach her through that. Yeah.
Or even, Sex and the City. There's this one part back in the old times where Miranda's pregnant. And it's like on episode one of the season, she's like got a little bump, feeling nauseous. And then like on the second episode, she's like already in the third trimester. I was like, it's not like that. Yeah. She should have been pregnant this whole season. Like, and I remember getting sort of infuriated about that. So I don't know. I think it's important to cast authentically. It's cool.
I mean, they could have hired a person who's a coach who was pregnant, who could have sort of coached, Kristen Stewart to do the shit she needed to do.
Yeah, it was just
like,
so
if there was a pregnant person on set,
right?
Been like, no, you need to be doing this or like demonstrating in the moment,
right?
Yeah. The other thing is that they wanted to use a lot of slang in the film as well.
Okay.
And like 80% of, so I guess this would be a sigh, but like 80% of prisoners at La Maca are actually under the age of 30. They're very, very young. They imprison because microbes, the microbes, the lack of employment for young men. And so you'll see a lot of parallels. So between, I think, the American prison system. For me, it reminded me a lot of that. And I just being aware, like providing a trigger warning, if you do watch this, like it can be, it's intense. Like it's an intense film.
There it comes out. I was like, what is that little boy doing here?
Yeah.
Like that child is a 12-year-old.
That was intentional.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an intentional decision. I guess finally, like when I saw the trailer for this, I thought there was going to be more fantastical elements.
For sure.
So I was a little disappointed about that. But other than that,
what would you call this? Like magical realism, yeah, dystopian?
Yeah, magical realism.
To the point where when the fantastical things did happen, they felt a little misplaced.
Yeah, they did. They
remember
also
that fight scene. I was like, is it bad CGI or is it just like this hasn't happened to all movies?
So you know, the budget, but yeah, okay. And also the scene, the fantastical element is. And I think this is done intentionally, right? Because this boy is required to tell a story about this gang leader, but he starts his story in like 19th century Africa, like the turn of the century, and then he jumps into modern day. But that fusion between past and present is a point that's trying to be made here.
Yeah, until the crowd called him out for it.
Well, because he keeps on just making things up because he doesn't want to fucking die.
Wouldn't you, fool?
What size did you have?
I agree with you. It just like I said at the top of the episode before I let you even get into the summary, the running time felt very lengthy.
Mm. You know also, you know what else is long? Parenting.
Good. It's like, where are you going with that?
Parenting is long, so get used to long things.
That's fine. I mean, but parenting is long and Wild's not going to stay age two for like 7 years.
Right.
You know, so you see the natural progression.
The film was an hour and a half.
I know, but there was something like the first 40 minutes flew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember, we were like, damn, we're halfway through it. Or like first 45 minutes flew. And then near that second 30 minute chunk, we were like, all right, let's pause, order some brunch. And then we got back into it. And then the last 20 minutes, we were just like, all right, now.
Yeah.
Wrap it up.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it starts very strong. Please, please, please let us know what y'all think about this film. I think it's really important. It's one of those films where you're like, I won't be watching that again, but I'm glad I watched it.
Yep.
And not because it was bad. It's just like that was so, it's like Moonlight. It's like that was really great. And it only needs one viewing because this is not your regular Friday night, you know?
I think some films need teachers. Like Moonlight requires, I think, you know, a little bit extra help to watch. Like watching it with someone.
It's really good.
You know, support each other through watching it and discuss it afterwards over like some wine, non-alcoholic for you, alcoholic for me. But I think like this is a perfect film to watch with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it's not like, oh, Sierra's coming over. Y'all want to watch Moonlight? It's like, what?
Yeah. Like, oh, let me just put this on. Oh, what are you putting on? Moonlight?
Schindler's List. Yeah. It's like, girl, that's
no.
That's,
yeah, you need to like be in a right state of mind. You need to be able to think about it, reflect. So
correct. Sankofa is like that too. We probably said that last week as well. Well, Ben, with that being said, beautiful, talented, and now an improv student. Yeah. Why don't you warp up the show?
Yeah, in conclusion, watch Night of the Kings. Philip LaCote is the fucking shit. Read those articles we put in the description. You can watch if you have time. Go ahead and watch his interview by the African American Cinematic Association, African American Film Critic Association. There we go. African American Film Critic Association. Said it right. Yeah, check it out.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Sci-Fi Sci Podcast. Up next, remember we pushed this back, but we're doing it this time. Needle in a Time Stack, y'all. We got Cynthia Erivo. We got, what's his name from Hamilton? Leslie Odom Jr. It's going to be a good time. Orlando Bloom is all up in the shit. And it's
Legolas.
Gonna be...
You haven't watched Lord of the Rings.
I was thinking about Pirates. But yeah.
Pirates of the
Caribbean. There's two types of people in this world. The people that see Orlando Bloom's name and do Lord of the Rings, and then the people that see it and see Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's funny.
Anyway, we're not talking about white men right now. Be sure to watch Needle in a Time Stack on Amazon Prime, and we will see y'all next week for the show. Bye, y'all.
Bye. Bye. If you look at the thing, mine was said first.
All right, bye, y'all.